And we have a rare opportunity now to speak with the Chief Judge of New York State, the Honorable Jonathan Lippmann. In his annual State of the Judiciary speech this month, he made news in a few ways, including the creation of a new foreclosure part of the New York State court system. So we'll talk about that and more. Judge Lippmann, thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
The word part in the legal sense means like a department of the court system, like family court or housing court?
A part usually means a particular courtroom within a part of the system. The different courts, the family court, the Supreme Court, the county court. So they're special court parts. If you're talking about the foreclosure initiative, they're special court parts where people whose homes are being foreclosed on would come into a court part before a particular judge to see what can be done in terms of this proceeding. And we're going to take a new approach to foreclosures than really we've taken in the past, or I think than any other state in the country has taken.
What's the new approach?
The new approach is we have an agreement from the major banks that they're going to come in for 1 week at a time. They're going to send someone in who is actually able to, on the spot, do a mortgage modification and get this case resolved for the well-being of both the borrower, the lender, and of our economy and the people in the state. Because what normally happens is there are a lot of delays. The lender comes in, the person whose home is being foreclosed on, often without an attorney, and we're trying to correct that also, comes in without an attorney. The lender sends somebody, but they don't have the power, the authority, to really modify the mortgage and to make an agreement that will resolve the matter. And there's just too many delays, not enough real negotiations going on. So what we're doing is we're arranging for representation for all of these people coming into the part, and from the banks for 1 week at a time, like from Chase, from Wells Fargo, from the Citibank, the major banks, they will have someone there who will actually sit down and try to resolve this on the spot rather than these things going on and on and on that doesn't benefit anybody.
I've read that foreclosure settlement conferences tend to fail when the homeowner doesn't have a lawyer. That's right?
I do think that's right, and that's why we're creating really a network around the state between civil legal service providers, the bar associations, grant monies that we've been able to get for civil legal services. We're creating a network that each of these people will be represented so there can be serious negotiations. Again, even if the person being foreclosed on has a lawyer, if there's no one to talk to, you can't accomplish anything. So that's what this is about. For the first time, you're actually going to have people on the spot who will be able to work out a modification of the mortgage, which I think is what everyone wants. The banks don't want these properties back. They want to work something out, but there hasn't been the logistics to get that done here in New York or around the country. So we think this new approach will hopefully be a template for here in New York and around the country, and we have sought and we've gotten the cooperation of the major lenders, and I think that's a really tremendous step forward.
So you're creating a new foreclosure part in New York State, and also, right, I understand, a new court specifically for 16 and 17-year-olds accused of committing crimes, correct?
Yes. It's going to be called the Youth Court. And what it does is it changes the age of criminal responsibility for adolescents to 18 in New York, where right now kids, and that's what they are, who are 16 and 17-year-olds whose adolescent brain development is not the same as adults, wind up in the adult criminal justice system, and they get convictions for these lower-level offenses, nonviolent offenses. They wind up getting convictions that ruin their lives. Later on, it hangs over their head, whether it's education or housing or employment, and we want to take the family court approach, which emphasizes rehabilitation rather than incarceration, to treat these kids in a special youth court that really takes the best features of our family courts and our criminal courts and puts them in one place where at the beginning of the process, these cases could be adjusted by probation so they actually never even become court cases. And if they do become a court case, at the end of the process, we have alternatives to incarceration. They're not criminal convictions. They're more like the family court result, which mm-hmm. is a charge of delinquency, which is later sealed. And
this is only for nonviolent crimes, correct?
Nonviolent. Look, in New York, for serious felony crimes, the age is less than 16. For murder, it's 13. For major felonies, you know, rape, aggravated assault, it's 14 and 15. So that's not at issue here. These are low-level offenses. These are kids who we make into hardened criminals by putting them into the adult criminal justice system.
Right.
We don't serve public safety, and we don't serve our lives in our communities.
My guest, the Chief Judge of New York State, Jonathan Lipman. The pendulum seems to swing on this question. In the 80s and early 90s, when crime rates were so high, the New York Post was calling teenagers words like super predators, you know, and the big push was to have them sentenced as adults if the crime was serious enough, so there would be consequences and prevention. Now you and Governor Cuomo, Governor Patterson before that, all talking about this, working on the those horrible juvenile detention facilities around the state and trying to do something different. Do you think the way the pendulum swung before had backfired?
I think to some degree, but it's more a question. What's happened in the intervening years is the science of adolescent brain development has really gotten so much more advanced. The United States Supreme Court has recognized it in death penalty cases and in non-homicide cases that kids under 18 are different. They don't weigh risks and consequences the way adults do. And that's why we treat them differently. And yes, the a lot of these very violent crimes, years ago, you remember the Willie Boskett case, which was a major case in New York, where that's when some of these tougher laws, even lower than 16 and 17 years for the very violent felonies. But what's happened in these intervening years is we have a new science that recognizes the difference between these kids who commit nonviolent, lower-level offenses, the way their minds work compared to adults. And what the last thing in the world that we want to do is to victimize these kids again by putting them into the adult criminal justice system. We jail them, we victimize them, we give them criminal records, and it makes no sense. It does not serve public safety. And I'd say there's a broad consensus of this on this issue across the board, from the whole spectrum of liberal to conservative at either end. Everyone understands that this is a different world we live in today, where we know more about kids and what makes them tick. And, you know, all of us who have been associated with teenagers, you know, shake our heads. They do silly things. It makes us tear our hair out and shake our heads. But it doesn't mean we should ruin these kids' lives. Well, and that's what this is about.
Also, in your State of the Judiciary speech, you announced new steps to combat wrongful convictions.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the contenders for best documentary at the Oscars was the HBO series Paradise Lost.
Right.
I don't know if you know it, but it was about three teenagers who were wrongly convicted of killing 3 8-year-olds.
Right.
They spent almost 20 years in prison. One of them was on death row on his way to wrongful execution. And it was the advance of DNA technology was able to basically demonstrate their innocence years after the fact. How big a problem do you think wrongful conviction is, even in the era now of DNA?
Oh, I think it's a major stain on the criminal justice system in New York and around the country. One wrongful conviction is one too many, because what happens is the guilty person continues to prey on the public, and the innocent person, and his life is ruined and that of their families. So we think there are basic steps that should be taken to eliminate this scourge of wrongful convictions, and they include, you know, expanding the DNA database, which not only helps us catch the bad guys, but also exonerate the innocent. Also, the right to post-conviction DNA testing, that people who take pleas at a later point, sometimes there are false confessions, there are reasons why that conviction was wrong and the person is innocent. We want them to have the right to DNA testing. We want police interrogations to be videotaped. And we, for the benefit of everyone, the police, the defendant, it protects the integrity of the process, and we want to make advances in terms of eyewitness identification, which is another main cause of wrongful conviction. So wrongful convictions need to be addressed here in New York, and we ought to do it now while we're having this whole discussion about expanding the DNA database.
So you're the Chief Judge of New York. You've laid out an ambitious agenda in the State of the Judiciary speech, especially regarding protection for parties at a disadvantage, teens, yeah, indigent defendants, struggling homeowners facing foreclosure. Does that mean you're an activist judge? And is that a dirty word in your opinion?
Number one, I don't think it's a dirty word, but I think there's two different kinds of activism. When you talk, in the convention, in the political arena, when they talk about activist judges, they're talking about judges on the adjudicative side who, in some people's opinions, are going beyond what judges should do in interpreting the law. This is not about any of that. This is not about our decisions on the bench. What this is about is that the judiciary is dedicated to the pursuit of justice. This is our very reason for being. If we don't do that, there's no reason for us to be there, and that's what I'm doing. I'm doing what judges have done in all the years, centuries ago. The biblical command, justice, justice shall you pursue for rich and poor, high and low alike. That's still our mission all these years later. That's our constitutional mission, to pursue justice, to pursue equal justice for all. And if that's activism, it's okay with me.
Yeah.
But it's not the conventional kind of, when they talk about activist judges, they're talking about the adjudicative side. So I'd more call it a proactive in the pursuit of justice. And that, and again, that to me is our very mission.
But also sitting on the bench is a big responsibility as chief judge at a time when the role of the independent judiciary, a foundation of our democracy, is under some attack. Newt Gingrich, for example, says if elected president, he would sometimes ignore rulings from the U.S. Supreme Court that he doesn't agree with. So much for the rule of law as we know it. How do you see the importance of the judicial branch? And this is the last question before you go. How do you see the importance of the judicial branch in the scheme of things today?
Well, I think the independence of the judiciary is critical to our system of government. I think that the one thing that distinguishes our country from every other place in the world is this singular devotion to the rule of law and the pursuit of equal justice. And to me, our system of government can't function without that, and that the judiciary, again, in our country, is why the United States is a shining beacon around the world. So totally, and I don't think this is parochial in this regard, totally central to our way of life and our system of government.
The Chief Judge of the Court System of New York State, which also means he sits as the chief on the state's highest court, the Court of Appeals, Jonathan Lippman, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian. My pleasure. Delight.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. Stay with us.